It's the gift of our shared humanity to encourage each other in our faithfulness, to support each other in our shared ways of journeying in life with its joys and its struggles. So thank you, choir, for inspiring us all to remember just the gift of faithfulness, how it encourages the human experience. Was a lady by the name of Kate Bowler, who's an associate professor of Christianity at Duke University. She's a provocative thinker and writer, at least in my book. And she wrote a book entitled, No Cure for Being Human. No Cure for Being Human. And in this book, she just kind of makes a point, the best that any of us can do as persons created by God is to be human. And if you know anyone that's ever been in a recovery program, you know this is one of the tenets that they preach, that the best that any of us can be at any given time is human. Now, because the best we can only be is human, some of us realize every now and then we not only disappoint ourselves and we disappoint others. So, sarcastically, some people will say in our humanity, when we do things that are stupid, we say that you can't fix stupidity, or that sometimes we get stuck in stupid. And it's just one of those cynical ways to say, you know what, the best any of us can do is be human. So Kate makes a point in her book to say, we live and we love and we're gone. And in that space between living and being gone, you and I have a chance to live out our humanity as best we can. So the challenge for all of us is how that we look at those moments when we have those faux pas, when our shared humanity hurts someone else, yes, when it seems like we are stuck in the gear called stupid for a season, how do we look at our imperfections and see our imperfections as gifts and opportunities? How do we see our humanity, especially our imperfections, as a gift and an opportunity? So I want to introduce you to a Venn diagram that kind of will be the guide for today's conversation, because for all of us, as we share this Venn diagram, we go through seasons which we have conversations with ourselves and with others, and in the midst of our humanity, we sometimes confess to ourselves and to others our shortcomings. And right there in the middle is that opportunity for forgiveness. So today's message is the practice of reconciliation requires certain steps, and one step is forgiveness. One of the most incredible sermons ever preached is in the Bible, known as the Sermon on the Mount. And in this particular sermon, Jesus does a phenomenal job validating our humanity. He doesn't shame us. He doesn't criticize us for being human. Instead, he celebrates with us not only the joys, but the struggles to live out our best self before God and with one another. And in this very familiar passages for many of us, there's this language that Jesus uses where he says, you've heard it said, this particular principle, I say you live out this particular principle. And what Jesus is doing in this particular sermon is he's giving us permission to find that space where our imperfections not only can be gifts, but an opportunity to be that very best person that God is calling us to be. So today, let me share a portion of the Sermon on the Mount, beginning in chapter 5, verse 21, and I actually read from 21 to 26 for the purposes of today's scripture. And here's Jesus using this language, celebrating the joy and struggle of humanity. He writes these words, you have heard it that it was said to those who lived long ago, don't commit murder, and all who commit murder will be in danger of judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be in danger of judgment. If they say to your brother or sister, you idiot, they will be in danger of being condemned by the governing council. And if they say, you fool, they will be in danger of fiery hell. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go. First, make things right with your brother or sister, and then come back and offer your gift. Be sure to make friends quickly with your opponents while you are with them on the way to court. Otherwise, they will haul you before the judge. The judge will turn you over to the officer of the court, and you will be thrown into prison. I say to you in all seriousness that you won't get out of there until you've paid the very last penny. So what is Jesus saying about our imperfections that can be gifts or opportunities in this particular passage? For me, what he's saying is, in a world of jurisprudence, in a world where we want to make judgments about the behaviors of others, as best we can, as people of God, find a way to settle. Seek ways to settle those issues that come between you and another human being. And so what Jesus does in this language, he reminds people that before serious crimes are committed, like murder, what happens first is there's energy and pain and anger around our words. So he cautions, even in this particular scripture passage, that certain words shouldn't be spoken. And behind those words, there's an emotion, there's a feeling, perhaps there's an unforgiving spirit. Now, I don't know about some of you, but when I was growing up, there were certain words I could not say, even though most people did not consider them to be cuss words or swearing. In my household, they were. So growing up, I could not call someone a fool. It just was not allowed. For me, that was the original F-bomb, to call someone a fool. And these days, as you and I know, people use F-bombs like commas and semicolons when they talk to one another. And so Jesus is really cautioning us, even when you say certain words, what's the reality behind that word, like fool or idiot? Well, at the core, there's something that's unsettled. At the core, there's something that requires forgiveness. So Jesus is utilizing this Venn diagram I offered you earlier. There has to be a conversation and there has to be confession. So Jesus is challenging people in their daily living and choices that we make, words that we say, that we look at ourselves before we cast blame that someone else is a fool or an idiot. We look at our own lives and we just ask this question. Maybe that person that I'm singling out with my language, maybe there's an accusation they have for me. It may not be valid. It could be false. It could be what I call historical fiction. A portion of the facts may be true, and yet then we color it with a narrative that makes sense to us. And Jesus just simply says, there's another path. And that path is called forgiveness. Looking closely at a story or a circumstance experience and just asking ourselves, could I be wrong? And how do we settle that tension and issue with someone else? So here's the gift that Jesus gives us in this particular passage from Matthew. He gives us this gift of helping us realize that forgiveness is a one-way street. In order for you and I to forgive someone, we don't have to ask for their permission. In order for us to forgive someone, they don't have to be repentant of their actions. It's a conversation that you and I have with God who we confess that maybe we've missed the mark. And in that space, spiritually, God just kind of opens a door for us to see the beauty of his love, because there's no cure for our humanity. It's something that has joy and struggle. And for any of us that struggle with forgiveness, Jesus makes it very simple. It's a one-way path to hopefulness. Jesus also makes it clear that this American ideal that you and I can live life with regrets, without regrets, is false. A number of us know people that say with their lives they have no regrets. And I believe that's a very unchristian thing to say that you have no regrets. I mean, if you're following Jesus and you want to have a life that becomes the gospel, if you want to have a life that's in alignment with the Sermon on the Mount, regrets indicates that we've been able to have self-awareness with how our words have hurt someone. Regrets are our pathway of helping to see there's an opportunity for us to grow in our understanding of the trust that we can have for God to guide our lives. And regrets, they help to bring along and empower the beauty of reconciliation. In Jesus' day, that word reconciliation, it wasn't a religious term. It was a term used in the sphere of politics, where a person would seek resolution over a dispute. The word reconciliation in Jesus' day was a term used in the sphere of relationships. Maybe there was a dispute between an estranged couple, and there was a pathway of how they were able to resolve those things that were unforgiven in their dynamic. And so the challenge for all of us as we practice reconciliation is that first step of forgiveness. You don't have to ask for someone's permission to forgive them. You don't have to require someone to be unrepentant. Now, here's where I want to pause in my sermon and just say, the person that just came to mind over the course of this sermon so far, as I've talked about forgiveness, may be that opportunity for you to practice forgiveness. The people that are scrolling top of mind, the circumstances in your life that in this space you are bringing to this space in this conversation, maybe that opportunity on this day to have that conversation with God and to be able to confess, maybe there's something I can do differently to live out this dynamic in a new way. For many of us, that's that song of discovery that helps us to see the possibility of being one with God differently, aligning our lives through forgiveness on a pathway of reconciliation. It begins first with acknowledging, yeah, you can regret some words that you said. You can regret some actions. And that's a pathway of finding God. This past week, like some of you, I was watching the Grammys. And whenever I watch the Grammys these days, and I realize I do not recognize 75% of the artists, I think, you know what? I may be chronologically gifted. And there was one category where I actually did recognize all the artists. It was for Song of the Year. And the winner was Bonnie Raitt for Song of the Year, and she was up against Lizzo and Beyonce and Adele, and she just pulled down the Grammy for a song entitled Just Like That. Lyrically, it's a story about a woman that has a chance to experience reconciliation in her spirit after the loss of a child. An organ is donated and it gives life to another human being. She has a chance to meet this human being that was the beneficiary of her son's loss. And in this Grammy Award-winning Song of the Year, there was a lyric that just kind of spoke to me about my faith, and I believe you'll believe that it speaks to you about yours. And here it is on the screen. No knife can carve away the stain. No drink can drown out regret. They say Jesus brings you peace and grace. Well, he ain't found me yet. I don't know about you, but there's a yet in some of the spaces where I need to practice forgiveness. This lyric just reminds me that all of us in our faith practice of following Jesus, we come to this point in space where we just have to surrender differently. We have to be able to grasp that way of saying, I was wrong, or maybe I don't fully understand what God has been up to in my life. And if you're on a path of forgiveness, that word yet is always a hopeful word. On February the 22nd, we will begin this season of Lent, and we're going to invite you to come to our Ash Wednesday service that'll be present here in the sanctuary. And you know, as I think about Lent, we don't have to start practicing some of its principles on Ash Wednesday. We actually start before. And as I was identifying some studies for the Lenten season, I ran across this one study entitled, Give Up Something Bad for Lent. Give Up Something Bad for Lent. And it's got a pretty cool premise. The author, James Moore, says, you know, many times when it comes to Lent, we give up those things that we love. And we give up chocolate. And we give up drinking. And we give up desserts. And we give up coffee. Now, personally, I never give up coffee for anything. You will not like me without coffee over the course of a day. But James makes a point. We give up stuff that we love, and after 6 weeks, we return to it. We return to the drinking. We return to the desserts. We return to the chocolate. And he suggests, why don't you give up something bad that you don't need in your life? So maybe for Lent, you give up despair. Maybe for Lent, you give up jealousy. Maybe for Lent, you give up a grudge that you have against someone else. Maybe for Lent, you give up bitterness. So in this book, Give Up Something Bad for Lent, which again, this is one of the appeals I'm making for you to sign up for a Lenten study, maybe to study this book. James Moore tells a story about the movie Rain Man, and some of you may remember it. For others, you may not. It's a story about two brothers. One brother's name is Charlie. Charlie, when he's 16, he brings home a great report card, and he asks his dad to allow him to drive his convertible to celebrate his great grades. His dad says no. So Charlie takes the car anyway along with his buddies and goes for a joyride. And you know what Charlie's dad does? He calls the police and reports that his car has been stolen. All the boys get tossed into jail, and the other parents bail out their children, but not Charlie's dad. Charlie's dad makes him stay in the jail for 2 additional days to teach him a lesson. Charlie is ticked. So he doesn't return home after he makes bail. His dad tries to reach out to him over the course of years, but Charlie doesn't respond. And when his dad dies, his dad leaves to Charlie the convertible that had estranged the two of them. And unbeknownst to Charlie, he had a brother named Raymond that he did not know about until the reading of the will. And his brother received nearly $3 million. And so Charlie, living with this bitterness, tried to scam from his brother an inheritance until he starts loving this brother that he never knew. His heart started softening. And there was a pathway where he allowed himself to allow that bitterness that he'd had with his father to dissipate so he could love his brother that he had never known more faithfully. And this brother lived with autism, and just the beauty and the gift of their dynamic of seeing the world differently became a lens of a softening of heart for Charlie and his brother Raymond. But bitterness had to be given up. So today we ask that question of you, what is it that you need to give up in order to make reconciliation a practice? I want to invite Renee to come forward, and as Ray's come forward, he's going to sing a song that captures his story, but as he's sharing his story, you're going to see it's your story. And again, because I've asked you to locate your pins on your bulletin, there's some lines underneath the message title where I want you to write down the name of someone are names of people you need to forgive. And I'm going to ask you to do it right now, this morning, because once you go home and you're trying to get things together for your Super Bowl party, you're not going to be thinking about church. You may be thinking about church for maybe another 10 or 15 minutes. Why? Because we're human. And this is just how this dynamic works. So while we're in this space, and while Renee sings his story, and you connect with it, write down the name or names or circumstances, for maybe today is that day you practice forgiveness as one step in the practice of reconciliation.
The day he passed away, I went to check the mail and found an envelope addressed to me. I'd waited my whole life as I grabbed my paper knife and opened up an old apology. It read, "Son, there's something I have to say. I kept you waiting for today. My time has come and death is growing near. There were moments to forget, but I've only one regret, and the time has come for you to hear. I never learned to let go of the wheel. I never thought to think how you might feel. And all my life I didn't know I was hurting you, 'cause I didn't know that I was hurting too. I rocked you to sleep, but I never let you dream. Your childhood was not your own. The life I never had, I wanted it so bad that I signed your name for you on the loan. And as the years went by, I thought that maybe I should sit you down and come clean. But I couldn't run the risk that you would be so pissed and run away never to be seen. 'Cause I never learned to let go of the wheel. I never thought to think how you might feel. And all my life, I didn't know I was hurting you, 'cause I didn't know that I was hurting too. And I hope this finds you well. As far as I can tell, you made your peace with me so long ago. I'm proud of what you've done and the man you've become, and I love you, and I want you to know." And as I stood there misty-eyed, I felt something deep inside, not so much a belief, but a thought. The time has come to forgive, so that I can start to live and write myself the letter I never got. 'Cause I never learned to let go of the wheel. I never thought to think how he might feel. And all my life I never told him what I knew, 'cause I didn't know he was hurting too.